you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
Probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds, you're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to the Varsity Club Podcast. My name is Derek Peterson. Joining me this week, he is the senior sports editor at the Daily Nebraskan and the Diversity and Inclusion Internal Chair. If I got that wrong, it's your fault, Drake, because I'm reading off of your Twitter bio. Drake Keeler, hello, how are you?
Hello, that is correct, and I'm doing good.
Thank you for coming on my podcast this week. Thank you also for going on Sasha and Aaron's podcast this week, the Mind Your Own podcast. You were on there on what, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever you guys recorded?
I recorded with them on Monday, but came out Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. So I have to put Aaron on blast for a second because I guess Sasha too, you're going to kind of get hit by proxy, but like in the podcast, Aaron goes, you would think that we would have better communicated what was going on considering we worked together. And I was like, whoa, come on. I scheduled my time with you before Aaron did.
That's true.
I feel like Aaron sort of stole my podcast guest for the week, but it's whatever. So I will direct everybody listening right now to go listen to that episode from this week of the Mind Your Own podcast. It's got Drake in it, obviously, and then Aaron and Sasha, and you guys talk about sort of your work as the diversity and inclusion internal chair and some of the stories that you have that you've kind of been working on over the last year, 6 months, however long it's been. We'll get to that in a second. But first, I would like to ask you, as a fellow basketball person, we're recording this on Thursday. Thursday night. Kevin Durant and LeBron James will be selecting their all-star teams from the pool. I don't understand why Kevin Durant is still picking his team, even though he's not going to play. But it is what it is. So my question for you, Drake, you have the first pick in this draft. You get to pick from the starters who are, let me pull this up, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, and Jason Tatum. Who are you picking for, Team LeBron or Team Durant first? This is going to reveal some preferences here. And then what would your first pick be?
Okay. I think I'm going to go with Team LeBron. For being a captain, I guess. I mean, it's not a huge difference to me right now. But for my first pick, I'm going to go with the Joker, Nikola Jokic. Ooh. I have to. I am from Colorado. I love watching Jokic. If the Nuggets had a few more wins, he'd be the MVP. I think he'd be the MVP front runner. And he's going to be in that conversation. So he's very fun to watch in a lot of ways. So I gotta go with Jokic.
A LeBron Joker pick and roll would be incredible. You could invert it. You could do a bunch of different stuff with that. Yeah. I was talking to a buddy earlier this season and everybody was so focused on Boston. And I was like, man, what is going on with Denver? Like, is this just because they played super late and they played all of those? I mean, they played grinded out series in the playoffs. So like, obviously the Lakers played long too into the postseason, but like, are they struggling because they don't, like they didn't have recovery time, or are they struggling because they don't have Jeremy Grant anymore? Like, I feel like nobody is talking about them, but right. Yeah, I think you're right. Like if they were winning more, Jokic would probably be in the conversation for MVP. He feels like a guy that's going to win one at some point. Like if Joel Embiid gets this one this season, the center position not just in the NBA, but just in basketball in general, has really sort of, or is experiencing sort of a renaissance. Right. He feels like he's going to get one.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like he definitely could. I mean, he's doing like insane things this season already. So
LeBron over Durant. I might pick LeBron, and then I would either have Kawhi Leonard if I'm LeBron. And then, you know, when you get to the fourth quarter and you have to deal with the Elam ending and all that stuff, I have two of the best defenders on the floor, or potentially the best defenders on the floor. And if I was Durant, I'd probably pick Giannis. That'd be incredible. Arms everywhere. Arms everywhere. Let's talk about you and your work at the Daily Nebraskan here just real quick. Top three stories that you have written, and just kind of your thoughts on this diversity and inclusion internal chair position that you guys have sort of really been, you've spearheaded this effort at the Daily Nebraskan. Am I right? Because this didn't exist before you guys.
Yes, correct. Yeah. So top three stories. That's a tough one. I think in no order, I would say the coverage I did of the Minority Student Athlete Collective rally has to be up there. I did three stories. If I have to pick one, I'll go with the feature story I did a few weeks after the rally. But just because, I mean, that moment, those few weeks are really important to me, because obviously after the rally, I spoke up about the lack of media coverage at the rally, and it was something very important that I felt like I needed to cover. And so the stories that came out of that were really important to me. Second, I'd say in February 2020, I did a story on Amara Smith-Spates. She's on the bowling team. At the time, she was one of three black bowlers to ever be in Nebraska. And that was a really important story to me, a really great story. And I think it was, you know, the first feature story I wrote that really combined like race and sports, which is a passion I really have now. So that was a really great experience for me. And then another one, the third one I'd say would be one of my more recent stories. I did on the Divine Nine in Nebraska football for the last part of our Black Lives Matter project that we're doing right now. That was a story where I got to talk to Tony Butler and Guy Rozier about being an Omega Psi Phi and taking the traditions from a black fraternity and being on the football team, and how that dynamic works and the legacy that kind of exists with the Divine Nine fraternities in Nebraska athletics that isn't talked about very much or noticed very much. So to bring that story to light was really important to me.
You talked about sort of the significance of black fraternities in the podcast that you did with Aaron and Sasha. And right. I remember listening to that and thinking, cause I had Mike Babcock on my podcast last week, and we talked about the Magnificent Eight and kind of his story that he wrote on them. And one of the things that was sort of prevalent in his story and then in his retelling of it was some of those guys came to Nebraska specifically because of a black fraternity that was at Nebraska. And I don't know that people realize like that is actually a thing that plays into the thought process of some prospective student athletes that come here.
Right.
You know, like Darian Daniels was a guy who was a part of one. And like that, you know, everybody talks about, oh, facilities winning this and that. Like that I think is a bigger piece of it than maybe a lot of people realize.
Yeah. I actually did mention the Magnificent Eight article in my article, because that's part of, you know, why I really wanted to look into this, because I saw something about Tony Butler and then I saw that Magnificent Eight story. I was like, maybe there's like a story here that I can piece together. And then eventually there was. But I think like, yeah, it's really important. It's a big part of why some athletes want to come here. I mean, we're in a very white state, and if you're interested in coming to Nebraska, having that community where you're around people that look like you, that can be really important in having that representation right around you in Nebraska.
One of the Now, I haven't been following this super closely. I probably should, but I just haven't been following men's basketball real closely. I've been focused on women's basketball. One of the things that you wanted to talk about or suggested we talk about is what's going on with Creighton.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on kind of that situation that's over there? I saw Justin Patton said something about it. And Greg McDermott told a radio show, ESPN The Zone, that he offered to resign, and his players said, no, we want him to coach. But nobody has taken any questions on what happened. What are your thoughts on kind of that situation as it's sort of unfolding?
Yeah, I think I'm still processing my thoughts on that, honestly. Because, I mean, when it came out and he issued that apology, I was like, whoa, you know, that's not something I've ever heard before. It's obviously a big deal. I think, you know, I haven't, like, always followed Greg McDermott closely. But, you know, just seeing, like, what Creighton, the messaging Creighton has put out on social justice and things like that. I think he's a guy where, like, they'll give him the benefit of the doubt, you know, just with what he's done. And obviously that's evidenced by, like, the players wanting him to stay. I'm sure there's more to it than that. But the most interesting thing to me was that he didn't take questions about it. You know, he apologized and he offered to resign, which I think is, you know, good for him. But when you say that you want, like, to have these conversations about it, it's really interesting when, you know, all the any disciplinary action would be kept private and you don't want to answer questions about it at the press conference. Because I don't know. That kind of shows that, like, you – I don't even know how to word it. But, like, in that case – it's almost like he wants to talk about it on his terms, which is really interesting, versus, you know, letting people ask about it and all the details. And a lot of former players, one of the women's basketball players spoke up, and I don't know. I think it would be good for him to actually take questions about it.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation. I mean, sometimes trying to keep a situation like this in-house can sort of be viewed from the outside as shirking responsibility or accountability, maybe. I think it'll be really curious to see what happens after their season concludes. And it was interesting to watch sort of the knee-jerk reaction to his apology, because the first time that I'd heard of this was seeing Greg McDermott tweet his apology. And the juxtaposition of, I've never used that before, I've never said that before, while also the fact that he was speaking to his team, as he said, in the moment, in the heat of the moment, and it just sort of came off the cuff. Like we were talking in our Slack channel about it, and we're like, I've never heard that phrase before. I've never heard that phrase before. And I grew up in Oklahoma.
Right.
And, like, so if you've never heard, like, so if I've never heard that phrase before, that's not coming into my head in the heat of the moment.
Right. And yeah, so that was really interesting.
That part of it is interesting. And like, you know, I've seen a lot of people speak to his character. I don't know anything about McDermott. I don't cover Creighton. I can sort of, it, when I was thinking about it, I sort of related it to a situation that happened when I was in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma City Thunder, one of their broadcast guys on a broadcast during a Thunder game, said that, I think Russell Westbrook, I think the phrase that he said was, out of his cotton picking mind.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he ended up losing his job over that. And I remember having conversations with people, sort of in my circle back home, of why is that? I've heard that phrase before. It's never been said in any kind of demeaning or derogatory way. Why is that a problem? And I was like, just because, you know, you don't think that it's a problem, it doesn't mean that other people might not think that it's a problem. And some of these things are just like, just because, like, your grandparents said it and you heard it from them and they were like, oh, they didn't mean anything of it, that doesn't mean that there aren't still undertones to it. And I just think It's interesting. It's going to be an interesting situation to kind of watch unfold once their season ends, which I think it will once their season ends.
Yeah, I honestly just want to watch out. Like you said, just watch it. I really don't think they'll go as far as like firing him or anything. I mean, obviously, like the player said, they didn't want him to resign, according to what he said. But I think, I don't know, there's a chance it just fades away and they stop talking about it. I hope that's not the case. It seems like you think it won't be just because of how much outside pressure there's been from former Creighton players and current Creighton players in other sports. But like you said, yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Well, like with the going back to the Brian Davis situation, I mean, what Russell Westbrook came out afterwards and said that he didn't want BD to lose his job, that they had a conversation about it, and BD, you know, expressed that he didn't mean anything negative with the comment. It was just a comment that he grew up around, a phrase that he grew up around, and that they had kind of talked with each other. And I mean, you can speak to this more than I can, but I think sometimes that's just the most important thing, is showing that you're willing to learn why that was an issue. And so, like, from the standpoint of them keeping things in house, if they're doing that, then, you know, you can feel better about him remaining the coach. And if they feel like, they being the team, feel like that he's open to stuff like that, I don't know, maybe that makes things a little bit easier to kind of soothe the situation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know anything about Greg McDermott. He seems like a fine guy. What he said was very bad, but I think this is a situation where he'll probably keep coaching for a number of reasons, but again, I have no idea.
Let's transition to Nebraska basketball. You cool with that? Yeah.
Yes.
So someone asked me the other day what I thought of Fred Hoiberg and what I thought of kind of the direction that this program is heading. And this was before the recent 2-game winning streak that they had, just absolutely blowing out Rutgers in their last game. Right. I said at the time, things are all good. He's going to be good for Nebraska. They are fine. The program is moving in the right direction. I remember looking at their stuff early in the season. And like I said, I haven't followed them super closely, but I remember looking at their stuff early in the season. And just from a statistical standpoint, their profile early in the year was exactly the way Fred Hoiberg wants them to play. They were just missing shots. And I saw somebody put out their shot chart for the year, their kind of heat map, so to speak. And it was all threes and paint. And there was very little mid-range going on. So, like, when you look at what they're doing, they are playing the way Fred wants them to play. I just found the tweet. Somebody said that they had the best shot profile in the Big Ten. So from an analytical standpoint, all threes and paint twos, that would be the best shot profile, right, just based off of value of shots. They're playing very modern. They're playing pace and space. And in the last two games, they're starting to hit shots and they've won. And things have sort of looked the way that they're supposed to look, right? Do you think that this is just, they're at the end of their year, they're finally getting a couple of breaks, or kind of, how do you feel about the direction of this program and sort of where they're at now as they approach the end of a second year under Fred?
Yeah, I think, and I've gone back and forth on this, because I think generally things are fine. It's still the second year under Hoiberg. I haven't lost confidence in Hoiberg being able to turn this thing around. Cause like when he got there, I was like, I think he can be a good coach for Nebraska. And I'd say that the second year, as we reach the end of it, it's probably, you know, still underwhelming for what Nebraska would like to see in the second year. But the team does, I would say the team does look better. These last two games have looked really good for them. Even, you know, the Rutgers without Teddy Allen and winning that game by a lot. And that's definitely a good sign. I mean, it might be a combination of factors, just things breaking the right way. But either way, you take that. And that's always a good thing. So, like you said, they're playing they're playing how Hoiberg wants them to play, and they're going to get, it seems like they're going to get more talent in there. Bryce McGowan's is coming, you know, more transfers in the next coming years, of course. So I would agree that it seems like they are still heading in the right direction.
What do you think about their shot profile? When they were losing earlier in the year, there are a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot. There were several people that were questioning sort of this approach of being so perimeter oriented, specifically in the Big Ten, where there are the Luka Garzas of the world, of right. the college basketball world. You look at a guy like Ivanoy Drago, who is their paint presence. He only shoots paint twos, and right. his effective field goal percentage this season is 43.8%, which is awful. It's right. absolutely awful. It's the second worst on the team behind Thor at 42%. Yikes. So like when you say, oh, their shot profile is all threes and then paint twos. Yeah. But they don't have that post presence that is sort of stereotypically Big Ten basketball. Do you think that's a problem?
Yeah. I mean, kind of, not totally. The shot profile, it looks really bad when you're losing. It looks a lot better when you're doing it well, obviously, like most things. But I think it is important to have some sort of paint presence, and they are trying to find that, you know, with Derek Walker, Eduardo Andre. They've had their moments for sure. And Odrago is... definitely had his struggles this year, especially offensively. And that's like something that definitely needs a focus and something to improve on. But I definitely don't have a problem with like the shot profile. I think eventually, you know, once this team, ideally, you know, this team will be where Hoiberg wants it. And those shots will start going in more often. And once that happens, you know, people will stop complaining about it once it translates to wins, and that's okay. But yeah, I think it is important. You don't have to be like every other Big Ten team, but you should have some sort of paint presence.
I just added up there. Just added up their mid-range shots. They've taken 39 mid-range shots all season.
That's not a lot of mid-range shots.
No, they've taken 113 right wing threes.
Love that.
Which is insane because they take so, wow, now that I'm looking at this, they take a lot of wing threes. When you look at an NBA shot chart, it's a lot of above the break threes, corner threes, and then paint points. There's a story for you. Why do they take so many wing threes?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is.
Who does it first? Hoiberg wins a Big Ten title. He can win a regular season or a conference title. Or Scott Frost wins a division title.
This is tough. I think... oh, I have no idea now that I think of it. But I think I might have to go with Frost. I don't know when this would be. I don't know if it's anytime soon for either of them. Just because, I mean, Big Ten basketball is really good. It's likely going to stay really good. The Big Ten West is relatively weaker. The Big Ten West is probably easier to win than it is for Nebraska to win their conference, right? And I think because of that, Frost might do it first. But in terms of like who will be good first and who will be closer to the top of the division/conference first, I think there I would go with Nebraska basketball. But I don't know if they'll like be in a position to win it.
This is sort of like the thing with basketball and why really any sort of worry about Fred is a little premature, because like, when you talk about football, you have to build a roster and you have to build depth through multiple years of consistently strong recruiting. In basketball, and we've seen this with Fred, you can flip a roster in one offseason. He did it his first year, and then he did it again this past offseason. You can flip a roster real quick, and when they bring in Trey McGowan's, how do you see sort of them? Do you think they flip again? Do you think they drastically change things again? Or do you think it's sort of just adjustments around the periphery to try to account for this singular awesome talent that they have coming in?
I think it'll be a decent sized flip. Definitely not to the degree that it's been the last 2 years. But I do think, you know, there will probably be some transfers and a good amount to kind of, you know, keep bringing in what they want on this team. I don't think like they're at the point where like, okay, we have the roster we want and now we just continue to build that. I think they'll keep looking for transfers and have a decent amount of turnaround on that roster. But to go back what you said about divisions, like I don't even know what to think about that at times, because like I feel like generally it's a lot more important for Frost to win the division than it is for like Hoiberg to win the conference or lead the conference at the end of the season, probably. Because like you can make the tournament without winning the conference. For football, you know, that's in a division that doesn't have like an Ohio State. That expectation might be like a bigger thing for Nebraska. They've constantly said things about wanting to win the Big Ten West. That's been a goal that's been stated a lot. So I think there's also just like higher stakes there.
For sure. I think they could win the Big Ten West in the next 3 years.
Maybe. Yeah. I think they could.
And I think, you know, it's, I don't know that it is weaker than the East.
Right.
The East is getting better, but the West, I think, you know, because in the Northwestern, the year that everybody was like, oh, the East is just significantly better than the West was the year that Northwestern, right. If I remember correctly, was the year that Northwestern was down 2 years ago and they just had an atrocious offense, but they had one still top 25 defense. And then they flip it around. And this past year, they're in the Big Ten championship game again and competing with Ohio State at halftime. The West is tough. Absolutely. And I think this team could do it at some point in the next three seasons. I have zero clue what this upcoming season is going to look like for them, but I think in the next 3 years they could win the Big Ten West.
I don't think I see it like next season, just because of the roster changes and everything like that. Depending on what we see next season, I think I could definitely see it like you said, within the next three seasons.
This season will do a lot to determine what they look like in the next, in the following 2 years, because
absolutely
this season, and I say that specifically talking about Adrian Martinez, what he does this season will determine what their overall team, I think, looks like in the next 2 or 3 years. Because if he has a strong season, a bounce back season in what would be his fourth year starting, I don't know why he would come back for a fifth year, why he wouldn't just go to the NFL or try to go to the NFL if he has a strong enough year. And then, you know, you're able to sort of reset a little bit with the quarterbacks that you have. If he has another down year and either the NFL is not as realistic an opportunity for him, getting drafted, I should say, is not as realistic an opportunity for him, and he comes back, then I'm really curious kind of what happens with their quarterback situation and what happens with them moving forward. The thing about expectations, we'll bring this back to basketball for a second. The thing about expectations is that it's interesting. He doesn't have to win, like you said, he doesn't have to win the conference to make it to the NCAA tournament. But he does have to make it to the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
And this is sort of a thing that, you know, depending on who you talk to, you get one or the other. Does he have to be making the NCAA tournament more often than he misses it? Or in your eyes, is this a place where you just have to make it once or twice every 5 years?
I I think it might be another few years before they make the NCAA tournament, maybe a shorter time, maybe like 2 years. But once they do get that first NCAA tournament appearance, I think it'll evolve into the expectation where you like to see Nebraska making the tournament more than they miss it. I mean, I think if Fred is here for a long time, I think for like the next 5 years, one or two appearances will be great. After that, that might turn into the expectation of making it more than you miss it. So short term, I feel like just one or two would be great. But long term, I feel like that expectation will slowly turn into making it more often.
Which is good. It's good for the program when you have a guy that comes in and raises expectations to where instead of, you know, once in a while you're appearing, it's no, you got to be showing up and you got to be winning something. That's good. That's what the program needs, especially considering the facilities that they have and the arena that they play in. That would be nice. And I think Fred can get there. And I've said this a bunch of times in a bunch of different places. Like, I think he's a really good coach. I think Nebraska's lucky to have him. I think Chicago was stupid to fire him and kind of do him dirty the way they did in the NBA. And, you know, when you listen to sort of the smart basketball analyst people talk about kind of what happened with Chicago, a lot of them say, yeah, nobody really knows what Fred Hoiberg is as an NBA coach because he didn't really have any opportunity. And maybe that the NBA comes knocking again if he turns Nebraska around, but I think Nebraska's really lucky to have him.
Yeah, for sure.
Space Jam. We got Space Jam images today. Are you a Space Jam guy? You're a basketball guy. Yes. Are you a Space Jam guy?
Yes. I did not see the Space Jam images. Hold on.
I retweeted them, so you can go to my account and look.
Okay. I remember like seeing that they were out, but I did not actually look at the images.
I am very excited about this movie. Okay. And I am not excited for the inevitable, which Space Jam was better, Jordan or LeBron. That's going to be unbearable. That's going to be a hellish scape to be living in. But the CGI looks awesome. Bugs Bunny back in a basketball movie. Don Cheadle is in it. I'm very excited about this movie.
Yeah, I'm looking at the images now. This arena type thing is really interesting with all this background stuff, the CGI.
It looks like Tron.
I'm really interested. It also looks like there's a lot of people there, a lot of normal Earth people. So I'm interested to see where this game will be taking place. But I'm definitely excited for it. I'm definitely not going to be one to engage in the which Space Jam is better debates. I just hope it's fun like the first movie was. I don't necessarily need it to be a good movie. I'm just hoping it's enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't think the original Space Jam was a good film, but it was enjoyable as all hell. I still have I don't even remember what they're called. Now I'm blanking on what they're called. The cassette tape thing, the tape that you put into the VCR. I still have that. I still have that box, the plastic box that has like the trim around the edges that you open. Yeah. I have a DVD, but we still have the VCR tape. Is that that's what it's called, right?
I think so.
God, I hate to say that I'm close to the Gen Z, but I feel like I'm close to the Gen Z generation right now because I can't remember what the stupid thing was called. And we had them. I have the thing. I'm very excited for this movie. It's also terrible that when I saw the images, the first thought that popped into my head was when I saw the crowd in the background, I was like, oh, no masks.
Right. I'm just noticing that too.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Jordan or LeBron? Now I'm curious.
Oh boy. For a long time, I was a Jordan guy, and I think I'm slowly going over to the LeBron side. I would say either I'll pick LeBron or for like the last few years, I'd say I've been a guy where it's like, it's 1A, 1B at this point, whoever you want to pick. if you think Jordan's the GOAT, that there's a lot of reasons you can say that. If you think LeBron's the GOAT, there's a lot of reasons you can say that. I honestly feel like people just use a lot of bad arguments when debating it, and that just makes it not fun at all.
What's a bad argument?
Like LeBron, Jordan won a 9 in the playoffs without Pippen or whatever, and like the first 3 years of his career. I don't really see that as a valid argument against Jordan, because he was doing like insane things without Pippen.
I'm largely of the mindset that it doesn't really matter.
Right.
I think personal, because this comes down to personal preference. That's all it is, right? We're not going to see the two guys play. So it's all about personal preference and what you value most. And I've sort of had this conversation in a number of spaces with different sports too. Like I had a conversation with Mo Berry and Deontay Williams a few years ago about whether Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers was better than Tom Brady. And they felt that Aaron Rodgers was better than Tom Brady. And like, he doesn't have the rings. I guess I shouldn't put them on blast like that. I don't remember who said that Aaron Rodgers, but we had that conversation. And we were like, look, they're incredible quarterbacks. If you take away the rings component, because Rodgers hasn't played on the same kind of teams that Brady has, like, I guess you could get there. And so, you know, like when you talk about LeBron and Jordan, like they're incredible generational basketball players, but a lot of their greatness is different. And so, you know, in that standpoint, they're hard. I just look at it. I'm like, it's kind of like the Messi Ronaldo debate right now with soccer. Of like, just enjoy the both of them.
Right.
That being said, if LeBron wins a fifth ring this year, it's done. It's over. It's him. He's got the debate settled. If it's six again, because the only argument that you can make for Jordan is that he has six rings and LeBron has four and has failed all of the other times that he's been in the finals. If he gets to five, suddenly it's, you know, the rings argument is moot right at that point, I think.
Yeah, and he'd likely have to be like the Nets or like a very good team.
Yep. And if they're in a point where, like, I don't know if they catch the Utah Jazz, but if he wins an MVP this season and wins a fifth ring, I think.
For sure.
I think it's over.
Yeah. I think, like, if I had to pick one right now, I'd go LeBron. But, like, mostly I'm like, yeah, it's 1A, 1B. Take your pick of who you prefer.
I hope people have that same energy when the new Space Jam movie comes out, because I just want to enjoy it. I have these images kind of up on the side of my computer screen, so I just keep glancing over at them and seeing them and getting excited. Yeah. Let's wrap up with this. If I have all of my information correct, could be wrong. I'm wrong a lot. You and my colleague Greg Smith are the only two people of color covering Nebraska football or basketball. How do we be, and we being white people in media, because there's vastly more of us, how do we be better in that regard?
Yeah. In what regard? Let me just make sure I'm clear.
How, I guess, because, you know, a lot of people will scream, we'll just hire the best person regardless of the color of their skin. Just hire whoever's best. But that's not always what happens. How do we get to a place where it's not, you know, you don't look around and you see, oh, well, there's only one person of color, or there's one or two women covering this team or this league. Like, how do we get to a place where, like, we're not noticing that? Because I feel like what has also happened is we have noticed that, and then instead of, you know, making an effort to change the why that happens, we just are like, okay, well, we're just going to hire a few people of color and we're going to call it good.
Right.
So, like, what do we need to do? What do we need to be better at to sort of changed the landscape within kind of this little media bubble that we have?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a question, you know, I'm also trying to answer for myself right now. With this board, you know, the Daily Nebraskan isn't diverse either. And I think student newspapers are a great way to, are a great place to, you know, really try these diversity efforts, because, you know, that's where student journalists are developed. And we have to diversify our hiring processes and making sure, you know, we're doing outreach to marginalized communities, to diverse communities on campus, and making sure, you know, we're offering opportunities to, for Black journalists, you know, all kinds of journalists to get that experience for the real world. And then when it comes to like what you said, just like media outlets across Nebraska, it just comes to trying your best to diversify, you know, your hiring processes and make sure you're not just hiring, you know, people that look like you, people you're comfortable with, because they look like you, or because you feel that you can relate to them better. And there's a lot of ways you can do that. I'm not totally sure of all of them, but I mean, just being intentional with those efforts. And then once you do have, you know, a diverse range of journalists at your publication, or you've hired a diverse range of journalists, just offering that support while they're there. You know, retention is also a big part of this. You can't just, like you said, you can't just hire a couple Black people and say we're good. You know, you have to offer them the support you give everyone else and offer them the opportunities to grow at that publication or media outlet or whatever, wherever.
Intentionality is a good word. That when you said that kind of clicked in my head.
Absolutely.
To sort of bring this back to the basketball discussion, Fred Hoiberg's program was pretty intentional this summer with the way that they handled a lot of stuff. Was that good to see?
Yeah, I'd say so. And I mean, there was a lot of intentionality just from Nebraska. I mean, from student athletes, they took action. Nebraska basketball took action. You know, I did a story for another student site kind of this for my internship this summer. I did a story on Nebraska never having a Black head coach. And I talked to Bill Moose, and he talked about, you know, how diversity is important to them in the hiring process when they're hiring coaches. And now they're aware of, you know, they've never had a Black head coach and why that's important and why we're making sure, you know, when we're doing these hiring searches and all those things that these processes we're doing are equitable and allowing everybody a shot.
I think one of the things when you talk about will this coach or that coach, Coach A, Coach B, be successful at their program in this day and age, in this 2021, I mean, in the times that we're living in right now, you have to factor that stuff into it. I think you have to factor in sort of taking those things into account. And like you said, being intentional with how you behave, what you prioritize, what you value. And so like, I think when you talk about, can Fred Hoiberg be successful at Nebraska? So far, what we've seen is he can be successful recruiting because of his MBA pedigree. He can be successful attracting people to his program because of his innovative offensive mind. But then he can also be successful getting people to believe in his program and buy into his program just because of the way that he treats people and values people. And as we've seen so far, is able to relate to people and make, I think, the things that are important to them important to him. I think that's something that can't be understated when you're talking about like, will this person have success?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to like basketball and football, you're looking at teams of predominantly Black athletes. So you need a coach that understands or is willing to listen and understand what they're going through. You know, when we talk about 2020 and all the racial justice movements, you need a coach that understands that and can be there for his players and understand what they may be going through, because the players definitely care. So if you don't care, you know, that's a bad look. And show, and that's important to show that you do care about the players, the athletes you are coaching.
For sure. Well, Jake, I'll let you get back to your Thursday. I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Whenever we get through this Big Ten tournament and Nebraska has made a serious run and won the whole damn thing and punched its ticket to the NCAA tourney, we'll have you back on.
Right.
And we will talk about what the hell we just watched. I don't know that that's going to happen, but it'd be cool if it did. Thank you for coming on the podcast, dude.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
That's going to do it for this week. Make sure you're reading HailVarsity.com. Subscribe to Hail Varsity. Subscribe to all of the podcast offerings that we have as a proud part of the Herd App Media Network. That includes the Mind Your Own podcast with Aaron Sorensen and our producer today, Sasha Durkin. Shout out, Sasha. Drake was on this week's podcast. I will link to it in the show description on our website. If you are not getting the podcast from our website, make sure you are subscribed to the Mind Your Own podcast. Remember, if you have not already, go leave this show a 5-star review. If you leave a 4-star, 3-star, 2-star, or even a 1-star review, I will find you. I will track down your email address and I will spam clips of the Scott's Tots episode of The Office right into your inbox. Be safe. Talk to you guys next week.
A Herd App Media production.